Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening, and welcome to An Adventure in History. I'm Alana Quila with Providence Seaside Hospital here this evening with Mac Burns, Executive Director of the Clatsop County Historical Society. Tonight, we have a very adventurous...
Ooh, see, I was going to guess that one, too.
Guest.
We have this running gag that we pick what adjective we use, but I think adventuresome is good for
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. So on that note, without introducing yourself, because this is what we're doing now, so tell us a little bit about yourself without
naming your name.
Giving away who
just
you are just yet.
Give a couple clues without giving your name and your voice, and we'll see if people can guess.
All right. What's a good clue? Well, I was born and raised in Astoria in the early 1970s. I've been here my entire life.
And what do you like to do during the day?
I talk a lot of history.
Oh, there we go.
We just happen to be floating on the river when we do it.
There we go.
Oh, that's the deep tease. Have you figured it out, folks? I don't know. They might not have. Mark Schecker here tonight, owner of the
Arrow Tugboat and Tour Company.
I like that.
And we're going to get to that.
And I don't know if that was the first time I met you, but I met you when you were just beginning this journey mm-hmm. in the archives.
Mm-hmm.
And I've kind of wanted to have you on the show since then. So we are 4 or 5 years remiss.
Yeah.
But I remember thinking, wow, if that guy can do that, this is going to be amazing. So we're going to talk about how amazing it is.
So far, so good.
We just wanted to make sure his business could last. That's what we were doing. That's all we were doing.
That's right.
It's doing good.
That's right. Because, you know, if he abandoned it after just a week, we didn't know. So, okay. But you did not abandon it.
No.
So.
No.
But let's, because this is going to be a full show. So let's get right to the big history highlights. We got nothing to plug. So let's just move along.
Happy summer, everyone.
It is happy summer.
Yeah.
So these are the big history highlights, the things that happened tomorrow, June 27th. And as always, they're icebreakers or things to talk about. Or if you happen to be on Jeopardy and this happens to be the question and you get it right because of us, we want to cut. All right. So June 27th, 1844, Joseph Smith, the founder and leader of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, is murdered by a mob, an angry mob. He and his brother were in jail, and the mob stormed and took him out.
I guess I didn't realize that was the end.
Yeah.
Well, not the end.
It was the end.
Yeah.
All right. 1929. The first color TV demonstration is performed by Bell Laboratories in New York City.
I saw that. Yeah.
Color TV, 1929.
Yeah.
I kind of love that.
It's early.
All right. 1950. President Truman orders U.S. troops to Korea.
Hmm.
And coincidentally, the same day, 1950, U.S. sends 35 military advisors to South Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
So it begins.
Yeah.
I feel badly that LBJ kind of takes the heat for the Vietnam War.
Right.
And it goes back to, it goes back to the French.
Right.
And then it goes back, at least for us, it goes back to Truman.
Hmm.
So I feel badly. Anyway, 1972. The legendary video game and home computer Atari Inc. is founded by Nolan Bushnell and Ted Dabney in Sunnyvale, California.
Ooh, Atari.
See, I think you're too young.
Oh, it was around.
No, that was our first game console.
That's kind of what I was guessing on you when you said grew up in the 70s.
Yep.
So, I have a problem. I like the joystick.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what I grew up with. So like when Nintendo came out, I didn't like the kind of either side, your thumbs.
Yeah.
It had one button.
That's right.
It had one button.
That's right. I forgot the one button with your left hand and the right hand with a joystick.
Yep.
So what was your favorite game?
Oh, I don't even remember. Probably Space Invaders.
Space Invaders.
Yeah.
So I liked the game that came with it, the combat game, the like really bad little tanks and the little biplanes that you could like to, it was just very silly and I know the video games are much better now, but
oh, yeah. It's like watching a movie.
It is. I like the Atari. Anyway, moving on as we get away from Mac's childhood.
Yes.
2021.
Not history.
See, I do. I put this one in there just because I knew you were gonna shake your head at me and look at me very disapprovingly. Do your kids recognize the look, the disapproving look?
Oh, for sure.
Because that's one of the reasons I love sitting here with you. You give me that look about once a month. There's just this disapproving look at me that I know. Look.
My husband says there's really never any surprise about what I'm feeling. Mm-hmm. It's all there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you don't hide it. No. So 2021, that we all know for the record, Alana does not consider it history if it happened within 2 decades.
Correct.
20 years. But 2021, heat dome envelops the Pacific Northwest, with Portland posting the highest temperature since records began at 112 degrees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember that?
Absolutely.
Oh, for
like
sure.
Like it was yesterday.
I was out of the state. I did not experience that whole heat wave.
We were in shock.
I know. It's miserable because I can't stand if it gets above like 82.
Yeah. And then it was like 8. Yeah. Well, and our poor trees. I mean, man, they're just kind of bouncing back now. And yeah.
I put this in there because A, it was a year ago, and we all kind of remember that. And B, because I wanted to gloat that I was not here for that. I was actually in New Mexico.
where it was hotter.
No, up in the mountains, it usually rains like 10 minutes and then it's done. And we were there for a week and it rained every day except for one all day. It was the most bizarre thing in New Mexico. I was talking about, well, this rain, this is crazy. And any place that I went, people heard I was from Oregon. They were like, you must have brought the rain. And then I'd say, and it's 110 up.
Oh, my gosh.
So it was like this crazy, backwards, bizarro world.
Yeah.
But our history highlight of the day that you will agree is history, but I think it had the most impact of all the things on this day. 1829, the English scientist James Smithson establishes the Smithsonian Institution. In Genoa, Italy, English scientist James Smithson dies after a long illness, leaving behind a will with a peculiar footnote in the event that his only nephew dies without any heirs. Smithson decreed that the whole of his estate would go to the United States of America to found at Washington under the name of the Smithsonian Institution, an establishment for the increase and diffusion of knowledge. Hmm. Smithson's curious bequest to a country that he had never visited aroused significant attention on both sides of the Atlantic. 6 years after his death, his nephew Henry James Hungerford, that's a good name, indeed died without children. And on July 1st, 1836, the U.S. Congress authorized acceptance of Smithson's gift. Huh. And President Andrew Jackson sent diplomat Richard Rush to England to negotiate for transfer of the funds. 2 years later, bam, and they opened the museum.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Some dude that never visited.
Right. That's good. So, that's a good legacy.
And I think I told this story not too long ago, but I had my first museum director job. I was sharing with a board member this plan that I had, and it was very ambitious, and he wanted to speak my language. He was a dentist, and he did not speak history or museums, but he said, wow, if you could pull that off, why that's your ticket to the Smithsonian. And I just kind of laughed because I was like, you think that's everybody's goal that works in museums, to work at the Smithsonian? But
it's not a bad goal.
It's a pretty good museum.
Yes.
pretty good institution.
You missed a couple. So 1924, the Democrats offer Mrs. Leroy Springs the vice presidential nomination. And she is the first woman to be considered for that job.
Wow. Considered.
Considered.
She turned it down or they turned it down? They took it back?
She didn't win enough votes.
Oh. Yeah.
So
that's sad.
1880, Helen Keller was born.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I know. You missed that one.
I did miss
that
one.
That was a big one. So obviously a huge impact on the world.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right. And somebody who's having some big impact on our view of the river.
Yes. An experience.
That's a terrible segue.
That was.
So before we get to the arrow, tell us about yourself.
How'd you end up here?
Oh, God, where do I start? Well, in 1843. honestly, my mom's family was on the very first wagon train to the state of Oregon in 1843.
Oh, my goodness.
Co-founded the town of Silverton down by Salem. So our family's been in Oregon since then, my mom's side of the family. Mm-hmm. I had a great uncle that was a history professor at the University of Portland. So history's always been in our family, at least on my mom's side, even though my dad's side of the family probably talked about history more. And my dad moved to Astoria in 1970. He just graduated from Chemeketa Community College in Salem. And his first job was with the Oregon State Police. So they left the Willamette Valley and came to Astoria. And me and my brothers and my sister were all raised here and just got into the usual Astoria stuff.
Okay, so before we get to that, two questions. First, what was your maternal line's name that was here in
Down?
Down.
Yeah, Down.
The Down family.
Yeah, there's a road that separates Mont Angel and Silverton called Down's Road.
Oh, interesting.
And he, James Down, who is a first-generation immigrant from England, owned several sections of land. And my grandpa said he was one of the first hop farmers in the Willamette Valley. Huh. Very, very well-to-do. Had hundreds of employees. Actually, there's a railroad station called Down Station that's long, long since gone. But they lost everything. Most people know the 1929 depression, but there was an even bigger depression in the late 1800s, and they lost everything.
Hmm. Wow.
Yeah, just about everything except for small portions of land.
So do you have any stories, not necessarily for here, but like letters or documents of the trip that they took on the Oregon Trail?
Yeah. I've done some research on my own, and it turns out that particular train that they were in, they took what's called the Meeks Cutoff, which they've actually made a movie about. It's on Amazon Prime, and it's super interesting, but I've never dug far enough to see if there was any diary or anything. And that's even, so my great-great-grandfather James Down married Elizabeth Patterson, and it was her family. It was actually the Pattersons that were in the in the Oregon Trail that went on Meek's Cutoff, which is really well documented.
Yeah, yeah. So since we're talking vintage video games, did you ever play the Oregon Trail game?
No.
How did you do?
No, my wife loves that game, and I don't get it at all.
See,
everybody
of course,
everybody dies.
Yeah, everybody dies. Everybody gets typhoid or dysentery. Yeah.
I get bit by a snake. I don't know why. And then state trooper. So does he get to pick where he wants to go?
No.
Or do they just say, hey, you dude, you're moving to Clatsop County?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And what were their impressions when they moved here?
Well, my dad, when he was in high school, actually worked for a neighboring farm that he grew up next to. And he had to deliver produce to Astoria when he was in high school. So his only contact with Astoria was when he had to drive his produce truck here. And he remembers when he basically got when he got his orders, or the position was available in Astoria to move here, and his only memory was when he was delivering produce here, and it was blowing 50-60 miles an hour, and rain was coming down sideways, and back then the ferry was still running across the river and yeah, so he's like, why in the hell would somebody move to that town? So it's a big difference from the Willamette Valley to Astoria. Yeah,
sure.
big difference. Yeah.
And then he moved the whole family here.
Yeah. Well, we weren't born yet.
Oh, you weren't?
No.
Okay.
No, my oldest brother was born in 72.
Oh, got it.
I was born in 74.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what are some memories, impressions of growing up here?
Well, we lived out on Highway 202, almost only the Waleski area. My dad bought a little house for $11,000 that has its own history. It used to be, I think my dad said it was the night watchman's cabin or something from the Tongue Point Naval Hospital. And when they closed the Navy hospital, the guy that worked for the salvage company that was removing some of the buildings that weren't being used, he paid $1 for the house. And he dug a basement and put the house on there. And of course, this is the first house my parents bought. When they first moved here, they lived in Alderbrook. So they have a lot of good memories of Alderbrook. But that was before we were born. So they bought that house, and it was right on the shore of Young's Bay or Young's River. So we grew up from seeing the tugboats towing the log rafts up and down the river. And one of the famous stories that we just told my mom about a couple Christmases ago, and she still doesn't believe it. So my little brother was born in 1980. I was 5 years old. My older brother was seven. And when my mom was taking naps with the baby, we would go across the highway, get my dad's rowboat off the bank, and go out, row out into the river, and play on the log rafts.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. Yeah.
How many wrongs is there in that?
Oh, there's a lot. I think she probably could have gone without knowing that.
Yeah. We told her. We told her one Christmas. Yeah.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
Now, the log rafts, were there anybody staff near them? Or
no.
They were just kind of like...
Yeah, it was just storage.
There and, mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not old enough to know all the ins and outs. I've talked to a lot of people that worked on those boats during the peak of the, you know, the log rafting era. But when I first went to work for Foss Maritime in 95, we were still towing log rafts. It wasn't until the flood in 96 that log rafting pretty much ended on the Columbia River, except with rare exception. And that's because they took such heavy losses from that flood. Mm. It just broke so much of the rafting grounds and they lost millions of dollars worth of logs. One of my biggest regrets when I worked on those boats is I didn't go to Fred Meyer and buy a video camera. I mean, there were whole houses floating down the river and were just fighting over all the loose logs and log rafts, and a lot of stories went with that.
Well,
I didn't realize that that was sort of the end.
I couldn't have.
It makes sense, though. I mean,
I wouldn't have had a good time period of when did they end? When did they stop really doing them?
Right.
It just ended. Yeah. It just literally overnight. There was a few rafts that had to get towed out of the last dumps and the last booming grounds, and it was over. I got to deckhand on the old Louis III, which people that grew up around here remember seeing all the boats on the river. The Louis III was an iconic Napton towboat for decades. It originally came out of Westport, but it was an Astoria most of its life. And I got to work with Paul Flews and towed the very last raft out of the Lewis and Clark log dump. Yeah.
So amazing. As a kid growing up on that river, from a young age, did you know that you wanted to work on the water or near the water? You did.
That was my plan from day one.
So what was the plan,
on the water,
though?
Work on the water.
Whatever it was.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. When my dad first moved here in the 70s, his dream, when he first started with the state police, he used to have a lot of seniority, become a fish and wildlife officer. That was always his goal. Now you can go right into it. But back then, everybody wanted to do fish and wildlife. So he did traffic for over 10 years before he got onto fish and game full time. And it was a long road for him to get there. And when, I don't know exactly when I wanted to do it, but he wanted to retire and be a gillnetter because he became friends with so many gillnetters. I mean, he's really close with the Tarabakia family ever since we moved here. I think basically from meeting him at church. But then, you know, gill netting's pretty much, it was way over by the time he got to retirement age. And I originally wanted to be a gill netter or a salmon troller just because, I mean, we went to school, me and my brothers and my sister all went to Star of the Sea. So you had a big panoramic view of the Columbia River and you'd sit there in the classroom and look out over all the guys out there on the river. And that's the last place you wanted to be, was inside that school.
So did you have any experiences as a kid besides your dad's rowboat? Did you ever like go out on a buddy's gill boat?
Yeah. My dad was friends with so many gill netters. We used to go gill netting all the time with different friends of his. And I actually started a club in grade school called the Young Columbia Trollers Association.
Wow.
That would be a very different club today.
Yeah.
Right.
That's how big of a nerd I am. But we actually went to the state legislature. I think I was in fourth or fifth grade. We went there and testified in legislation against gill netting on the Columbia River. Yeah, they've been trying to legislate gill netting off the Columbia River going back to basically the beginning of gill netting every few years. And now it's pretty much done, except for the tributaries and side channels.
Right.
So Star of the Sea, did you transfer? You transferred to the high school and graduated from there.
Yep.
You only went to eighth grade at Star of the Sea?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Talk about a little bit about that transition, because we've had some other students that it was kind of
rough.
A strange jumping from Star of the Sea to the high school.
Yeah, I was in shock. I think Star of the Sea was really going downhill there, and I was one of the last eighth grade classes. There were three kids in my eighth grade class.
Oh, man. Wow. I didn't realize it was so tiny.
So I ended up making friends with all the kids from Lewis and Clark in Olney. because they came from really small classes and they were just as in shock as I was. Because I think our graduating class, there was 240 students in Astoria. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was that, I mean, how big was Star of the Sea at the time? Yeah. Total.
Oh, wasn't even close to that. Even. No, not even the entire school. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It was an interesting school to go to. And getting back to the history, I think that was another reason I got into history is we had a different, very different curriculum. It wasn't mainstream. And once a week, our entire class would walk down to the Favel House. And one of the, I can't remember if it was a volunteer, if it was somebody at the school, but we'd sit in the parlor and they'd read a chapter out of, I don't even remember what the book was now. And so we did all kinds of things. We went down to the port and had lunch with the Russian fishing trawlers when they were here. And we did bus tours with families that went to our church that owned logging companies and went out in the woods and all kinds of different things. Everything history.
That's amazing. Yeah. Was the Flavel House then, it would have been before it became the House Museum, it would have been when it was still our history museum.
Yes, oh. Yes. So the basement was...
Chief Kinkomley's skull. And yes. You could go up to the attic in the basement and...
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Interesting. When did that transition take place?
When we acquired the old City Hall in mid-80s, and yeah. We moved the exhibits over here, and then we said we're going to take it back to being a History House Museum.
Which is perfect.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It makes a lot of sense.
But, yes.
You know, at the time when they saved the house, right. What are you going to do with it? Well, we'll make it into a museum. So it's very funny, though, because we'll get people sometimes, well, I remember going to the tower, and I have to ask, what year were you here then?
Exactly.
And it's always pre-84, 83, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, I've been up there. So,
neat. So you obviously like history, and you obviously like the river. Were those things that you could explore in high school, or when did you kind of make that leap to, this is where I'm headed?
I don't know. I think it was just a progression. We got interested in history really, really young. And my mom, more people probably know my mom, Anita Schecker, than because she was the CEO of the Clatsop Health District, worked at the local nursing homes all of growing up. So I tell people, me and my brothers were basically raised in nursing homes. So we'd have to wait for her to get off work, and all these people would tell us stories. And then she started a program called Silver Threads, where we went to the nursing home once a week. The fourth grade class went down to the, you know, the old Columbia Hospital, the Clatsop
Care.
Yeah, Clatsop Care Center on 16th Street. And we sat and visited with all the residents. And I mean, I still remember my favorite story. I can't remember her name, but she was 104 years old early 1980s. And she told us that when she moved to Astoria, she was 100% Finnish immigrant. And when she moved to Astoria, there was no lodging. There was nothing. It was such a boom town. And they lived in a tent on the shore of Young's Bay, waiting for something to open up that they could move into.
Wow.
Yeah. So I never thought I'd make a career out of history. I was too interested in working on the water.
Wow. So tell us how you combined the two. What exists now?
So I worked for Foss Maritime, and we all got laid off for a lot of different reasons in the mid-90s. And then I went to work up in Alaska and came back, and then I met my wife, and I was like, well, I think my days of working on the water are over, because it's really hard to sustain any type of relationship if you're working on the water. So I did a lot of different things. Always did history in the background. It was always my hobby. And when I heard the former Astoria pilot launch was for sale, well, it wasn't actively for sale. I was asking about it because I knew it was retired in 2012. And that boat had a soft spot in a lot of people's hearts because it worked here forever. A lot of people had connections with it. I lived and worked around people that worked on it. So when it became available, I wanted to buy it and turn it, you know, convert it into doing waterfront tours with history. Just because not everybody appreciates the history aspect. A lot of people just want to watch sea lions and eagles. And
sure.
But that's definitely my core, you know, attraction.
So how much work did you have to do to get it up to specs to be able to do that?
Oh, I tell everybody to go to my if you go to my website and then click on my YouTube channel, I have a 20-minute slideshow on the history of the arrow, its provenance and Astoria history, and then we have a slideshow of what we did to rebuild the boat.
How many years?
This is how delusional I was. When I bought the boat in April of 2016, I thought I could just work on it through the spring and start doing tours that summer. And 3 years later, I think we were just about ready. And then the pandemic hit. So we lost an entire year. And we started doing tours 100%, you know, professionally last spring.
So talk a little bit about, because I want to make sure we get this in. So talk about contact information, website, and talk about the tours and what you actually offer people.
Yeah. So my website is arrowtug, well, it's arrowtug.com. My email is arrowtug@gmail.com. That's the first thing to do is go look at my website. We do kind of a standard where the boat is actually moored at the Skipanon Marina that the bar pilots own and operate, where they keep their boats. And we go out the Skipanon and we go along the Astoria waterfront and we go all the way up to Tongue Point and talk about the history of the Navy's presence at Tongue Point from starting World War One up until now and everything else, and just kind of hit the high points of the waterfront. And then people usually ask me questions and we dive pretty deep into some stuff.
How many people can be on the boat? What's a typical tour?
We're maxed out at 6 people. So it's not an inspected passenger boat because it wasn't built as a passenger boat. So the Coast Guard puts a limit of 6 people.
But that's pretty nice and intimate.
Yeah, so. Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah. I never wanted to have like a boat that had 50 people on it and I'm talking through a speaker. That's not that's not any fun for anybody. So, yeah, it's our normal size is, you know, 3 to 4 people, sometimes 6.
And how long of a voyage is this?
It's about 2.5 to 3 hours dock to dock, but we get distracted sometimes. It depends if I have other trips that day.
And truly, this is something for the whole family.
Yeah.
I mean, 'cause you can be inside.
Yes.
You can be outside.
Yeah, that's the most misunderstood. I don't do a very good job telling people or illuminating that on my website, is that the inside of the boat is now climate controlled. The visibility from inside the boat is actually better than being on deck because it's about 4 feet higher than the deck level. And it's windows all the way around the boat. So it doesn't matter what the weather is. Some people, it's pretty funny. Some people come book the trip and they're worried about the weather and they'll call me or email me and say, oh, I'm worried about getting seasick. I'm worried about getting wet and cold. I said, just come. And they always enjoy it. Even if the weather's rough, then they got a story.
Yeah. Well, I think you've got something because as a relative newcomer to the city, I think we're very disconnected from the river. We like the river walk. We like looking at it.
Yeah.
But I think very few of us actually get out
completely
on the water.
Completely different perspective.
And it is. The few times I've been out there, it's just an amazing perspective. I highly recommend and I love what you're doing. And what's your favorite aspect? Because we got about 30 seconds left. So what's your favorite thing to see when you're out there?
Oh, it depends on the day. It really does. Every day is different. I don't really have a favorite.
Maybe that's the favorite.
Yeah.
Every day is different.
It is. Yeah. That would be my favorite, is that every day is different because of the tide and the weather and the shipping traffic. There's always something different.
Well, wonderful. Nice. Well, thank you for sharing that.
My pleasure.
Your story and the history of our community with locals and others. So that's a great legacy yourself.
Thanks.
Could have been a two-parter, and perhaps we should have you back sometime soon.
Anytime.
Yes.
So thanks for listening. Go make some history. We will catch you next week.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.